I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Raptors Over Everything, a podcast for Yahoo Sports Canada. I'm your host, Wam Lu. Joining me to break down what was the best press conference of all time by Masai Ujiri is Vivek. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Masai, the GOAT. Masai over everything.
He got us fired up, man.
That was inspirational. It's hard not to listen to a Masai press conference and not have any goosebumps, not want to be a better person after.
Yep.
Not want to do more for the community, for your country, whatever it may be after.
The continent, man.
The world. So, yeah, just so much to talk about. And, yeah, I think you want to start with, you know, his future here.
I mean, yeah, let's start with the future here because that was – okay, first off, Masai won for an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to work with our video team to actually just post the entire hour of audio on this podcast because I really do believe that – I mean, forget even this podcast. Just go listen to that interview. Seriously, as a Raptors fan, you owe it to yourself to listen to what Masai was saying. But so he went on for an hour. First question was about his day and not in the sense of Kawhi, right? Because we'll get to Kawhi in a second. But his first thing was he was asked outright, do you see yourself having a long-term future here with the Raptors? And he outright just said yes. It's always been about Toronto. In my mind, I am here. My family is happy in Toronto. My wife is happy in Toronto, which is very important. And my kids are Canadians. You know what I mean? Like, I just think that, like, he talked about, yes, I do feel interest from other teams. He called it a blessing.
Yeah.
And it is. It is truly a blessing, especially if you can leverage that into more money, which I hope, honestly, Masai is getting every single – he should be getting the most salary out of anybody in the NBA.
Absolutely.
In terms of executives, because he is – he's amazing. And I think, you know, to this larger conversation of what he said about, you know, my kids are Canadian and my family's very here, very happy here in Toronto. I think he sort of repeatedly came back to this idea of Toronto being this place that just resonates with what he's trying to do as a person, for what he stands for as a person. That's something that he's very comfortable with. And I mean, just what were your thoughts on the fact that, I mean, it seems like Masai understands Toronto, at least the vision of Toronto, more than anybody else.
Yeah, I think for me, when he talks about his comfort in Toronto, his wife loving the city, his kids being Canadian, it all went back to his first press conference when he was named the GM and president of the Raptors, where he said, you know, I'm home.
Yep.
And, you know, I think he genuinely feels that way. And the other thing I think about is, you know, when the Washington rumors came out, there was sort of the narrative that, oh, you know, he that is potentially a place where he has more reach, that he can build more contacts and that kind of thing. But I think he views Toronto, and he mentioned this multiple times over the course of the press conference, that he views Toronto as sort of the biggest global marketing piece in the NBA, that the Raptors in some ways can be even bigger than the NBA or bigger than the other 29 teams because of their global reach. And, you know, he talked about Pascal Siakam appealing to Cameroon and Serge Ibaka appealing to the Congo and Jeremy Lin to Taiwan. And, you know, it goes name after name after name.
I mean,
and
he even said Bobby Webster appealing to Hawaii. Which,
exactly.
Shout out Asian American legend, Bobby Webster.
Alex McKechnie to Scotland. So,
yep.
I think that is what appeals to him in terms of his long-term outlook, in terms of the impact that he can have on the game, in terms of helping people, in terms of helping communities grow as basketball communities. And, you know, I think for him, again, it always stems back to belief, right? That's the number one thing he talks about. And for him, I think his belief, his goals, they know no bounds, and there's nothing that he sort of looks at as a ceiling. You know, he genuinely believes that the Raptors can take over the globe.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And at one point, he was feeling himself. But he even said, Manchester United and Liverpool, they call themselves the Reds. We're the new Reds.
Yeah.
And I'm just, as a Liverpool fan, as a United fan,
I know that hit you deep.
I was going to say, it doesn't affect me. It doesn't impact me. I'm happy to share. We don't have to change allegiances or anything. But, mm-hmm. That's honestly the way he's thinking about it. And I think this is something I remember back in 2017 when there were those rumors that Masai might leave for New York. And it's always the same thing. It's like, oh, he's going to a bigger city with bigger connections to hit this and this and this. And he can expand his outreach and they give him some more money. It's like, first off, MLSC, one of the richest conglomerates in the world, especially in the NBA world. So I think they can handle Masai's compensation just fine. I think the fact that in terms of a global outreach, I mean, you know, that talk about Washington, like, oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, where he's going to be closer to the White House and that's going to have bigger impacts for him and Giants of Africa. And we know that's ultimately what's most important to him. It really is the foundation more than anything else. But then you see him bring, you know, Barack Obama, or as he calls him, 44. Just casually dropping it. Yeah, me and 44 were sitting in the stands during the NBA Finals, and they were just admiring. Obama turns to Masai and he's like, "Yo, look at this crowd, look at the diversity." Like, you know what I mean? Like, Masai has everything he wants here, and I think, going back to 2017, I just remember stressing that time because like it was like Kyle Lowry might leave and Masai might leave, just like now Masai might leave and Kawhi might leave, and I'm thinking like, if Kyle Lowry left in 2017, that would have sucked. Mm-hmm. If Kawhi Leonard leaves in a couple days here, that would really suck. What would suck more than anything else in terms of the Raptors organization and Toronto in terms of just as a city and also as a sports town is losing Masai Ujiri. He is the franchise. He is the franchise. And like, I would never, ever, ever want to see him go under any circumstances. He is an amazing human being.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I conducted a little bit of an office poll after the first or second round, and I asked them, would you rather take the guarantee of 5 more years of Kawhi or another 25 years of Masai? And
give me Masai, bro. Give me Masai.
You know what I mean? And that's the type of impact that he can have franchise.
It takes vision. That's
exactly.
Very few people in this world have vision. And when you have a leader that has vision, I mean, he said from day one, we're going to win in Toronto. He said last summer, we're going to win in Toronto. Yep. He was sweating. Today, he was sweating. He said, we have won in Toronto, and we're going to win more in Toronto. Everything the man said came true because he has a vision.
And think about the narrative that he shifted, right? He talked about this in the press conference. When he came, it was about, it's too cold, people don't want to come here, taxes, this and that. And he says, now the narrative is truly that Toronto is a global brand.
Yeah.
That people know that by winning the championship, you know that you can win here. You don't have to be with an American team in a big market to do big things. You can do it right here in Toronto. You look at what Kawhi is doing with New Balance, the marketing. He's got command of the U.S. market and the Canadian market.
Yep.
And, you know, if you're looking at your global appeal, when you're looking at, an Instagram following, whatever it may be, when you've got someone at the top of the organization saying we aim to be a global brand, that's when, now you're saying, hey, we can be like the Lakers, the Celtics, whatever it may be, right? Those top tier organizations that people recognize all across the world.
Yeah, and that would be phenomenal. I think he understands that it's not just you can't just say that. You also need to sort of back it up by getting players from all over the world, and I think that's always been an advantage that the Raptors have had. Even going back to like Brian Colangelo, like it was pretty funny when he kept signing like just random dudes. Yeah. It was like some of them worked out, like Anthony Parker. He's American, but he played overseas, and he's sort of regarded as sort of an overseas player. But
shouts to Maccabi.
Shouts to Maccabi. There's the true MVP of Maccabi, man. But I think he was called like the Michael Jordan of I don't know. Anyway. Bargnani though, like Jose Calderon, like
Linus Garbajosa,
Linus Klaza. You know what I mean? Like, he had this. I mean, the Raptors have known for a long time that this is sort of the idea, and I don't think they executed well. And I think Masai has come with not just like, we're going to get players from overseas because they're overseas and they might like Toronto more than Americans might like Toronto. Masai actually understands, like, I'm going to build a great team, and I'm going to do it with these right pieces.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about Andre Bernier. We're talking about Marc Gasol.
Right.
So.
Do you remember when Brian Colangelo thought Juan Dixon was Spanish?
Did he actually?
Yeah.
Yo, wow. This is the first time I'm hearing this. Oh, my God.
Yeah, this story came out that Colangelo saw him at the airport, and he was like, oh, I only read your numbers. I thought you were Spanish. And, well, turns out that wasn't the case.
He was terrible.
But
Juan Dixon was bad as a Raptor.
I think the difference between that transitioning from those guys that came in before versus the team you see now is that Masai has predicated winning above all else.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so while as before it was maybe a bit of a marketing gimmick and looking to generate appeal for the team, Masai has put himself in a position where winning is what comes first.
Yep.
And then where you're from will come second. But to have guys like Pascal Siakam influence the team the way he has, to have Marc Gasol, to have Serge Ibaka, Jeremy Lin, all these guys, you know, mm-hmm. again, you know, it's not like Jeremy Lin's out there getting minutes just because, you know,
yeah.
where he's from. He wasn't able to get into the playoff rotation. Again, it's all about winning with this team. Sure. First and foremost, and I think that's what it comes down to in terms of the Raptors transitioning to a truly prestigious organization.
Moving on to Heastay 2.
Yep.
That was Heastay 1 was about Masai's confirming his staying. Number 2, obviously Kawhi Leonard. Masai said, you know, repeatedly, we're confident. We're going to respect his decision. We have a very good relationship. They've had meetings in the last couple of days, Masai and Kawhi. Masai also revealed that he texted Kawhi just yesterday, mm-hmm. and he got a call from Uncle Dennis this morning. It seems like there's a trust there, and you know, I think again, if you go back to this is a piece that I wrote for Yahoo Sports Canada, cheap plug, but like you just have to kind of look at what Kawhi himself has said. Kawhi very much is a person who will be transparent with you. Obviously, he's not going to say like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to re-sign here, or I'm going to go here, or whatever." Like, obviously, you're not going to do that. But he's pretty transparent about what his goals are for his career and what he wants to do. And generally speaking, he will go out and go and actually execute those things. And he said at the start of the season, I remember you and I were sitting in that press conference when Kawhi Leonard, you know, got asked by Doug Smith, you know, sort of, you know, how would you describe yourself? And he said, I'm a fun guy. You know, I can't just give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at. You know, like he said that his goals were to become healthy again. Which is big. You know, it's not even just like the physical aspect of going from playing 9 games to playing 60 games plus like 20-some games in the playoffs. It's sort of the mental aspect, too, of being confident in his body. And the Raptors got him to that point where he's able to perform at his best and even arguably better than he ever did before the injury and to win. And, you know, he's also mentioned that he needs to build trust within the organization because that's what ultimately led to the fallout between them and the Spurs. So, yes, we know he wants to go to California, but at least from the way I'm looking at it, the Raptors hit all the things on his checklist. They literally won a championship. I'm pretty confident. I mean, you can watch Kawhi watch, another cheap plug. But I'm feeling good. Based on this press conference, how does that change your confidence in terms of Kawhi coming back or Kawhi leaving?
I mean, based on Kawhi watch, I would say I'm right with you guys in terms of the 90%.
I said 85.
I mean, but you met him at the 90 at the end.
I said that was Alex averaging it out, bringing the average up.
All right. But either way, you know, 85 is still pretty high. I'm very confident that he's going to re-sign at this point because the biggest thing I look at objectively in terms of Kawhi's decision-making, the three things he's made clearest in terms of what his priorities are when it comes to choosing a team are his family,
yep.
his health,
yep.
and winning.
Yep.
And the Raptors proved that they can win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
They proved that they can cater to his health with the load management. And Alex McKechnie, I think Kawhi has a ton of respect for him.
Yep.
And, you know, even outside of just the treatment, they've had some truly like jovial moments before and after games, just enjoying each other's company.
Yeah.
And then when I look at family, when you look at Uncle Dennis being the first one to applaud Masai at the parade, when you look at
him giving a hug after the shot.
Exactly.
Amazing.
And, you know, even his family, his sister, his mom being there in the big moments and enjoying them, truly looking like they enjoy being here.
Oh, look, listen, you know? They were all at Oracle.
Yeah.
All the families of the Raptors were at Oracle.
Yeah.
Kyle's wife was there. I think a couple of the players, you know, moms were there. I think Kawhi's mom was there.
Norm and Kawhi took pictures with both their moms, yeah. right? And
shout out San Diego.
Exactly. So
SD.
I genuinely think he enjoys it here, and everything that he's looking for is available here. Mm-hmm. And then the other big thing that we go back to is, you know, Masai saying that his priority is to bring everyone back and yes. go for a title again.
Yeah.
And
this was in response to specifically being asked about Mark and Danny, in addition to all the other major pieces.
Exactly, right? And so, to me, that shows and shows me another reason why the Raptors have become a top-class organization. There's not even a hint of, oh, you know, we might need to see what ownership is okay with. Yeah, we might not be able to bring... No, it's... We're going to bring... Our number one priority is to bring everyone back.
Yep.
We don't care about the luxury tax. We will eat that. We've seen how the fan base will respond.
Yeah.
We've seen the merchandise sales go through the roof. All of that stuff impacts these type of decisions.
Yeah.
And so they're going to do everything they can to bring back this roster for next year. And that's a roster that Kawhi knows that he can compete with and mm-hmm. win a title with.
Yeah, for sure. And again, if you're going to compare yourself to United and Liverpool, then you got to do things like paying 75 mil for Van Dijk or 90 mil for Pogba. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
I mean, I understand it's a different system. Obviously, you know, soccer, there's different rules in terms of finances and stuff like that. You have
right.
more resources, but you can't charge fans like $25,000 and stuff to attend playoff games and then not actually turn that into luxury tax payments. So
exactly.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident on that front. The next item, free Masai.
Mm-hmm.
So Masai was asked directly about the ongoing investigation, which... To that, for me, obviously, I don't have all the details. I was in Oracle, but I was in the opposite side of the arena, so I couldn't actually see what was going on. Based on a couple of the eyewitness accounts that have sort of floated around on Twitter, it seemed like, unsurprisingly, there was an excessive use of force here by officials. And the fact that they're pursuing Masai is, it's just frankly ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely.
He, quote-unquote, showed his credentials in an aggressive way. And this is after they said he never showed his credentials and also pushed the guy in the face. And then now he has a concussion and a broken jaw or whatever. Like, just relax. We're not talking about Vegeta over here, okay? We're talking about Masai Ujiri. But Masai responded to it. He said his lawyers are dealing with it and he's going to respect authorities. I don't think there's too much else to add to this because I think Masai obviously, you know, is handling this whole situation. But I think we'll know more once this whole situation is resolved. As of right now, I don't really expect Masai to say too much about it.
I don't think the police authorities realized how much they were trying to bite off, and it's a lot more than they can chew.
Listen,
I really don't think they knew who Masai was, and now they've gotten themselves into this, and now they're trying to slowly sort of weasel their way around. And, you know, first there was a body cam. Now there's no body cam. Now it's, you know, so...
Only showing select images, like...
Exactly, right?
This
so
is
you,
ridiculous,
you can
man.
Make images look a certain way and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I'm sure once the evidence comes out, truth will prevail. And I'm sure that Masai will come out of this pretty much unscathed.
Yeah. One thing Masai said is, I'm confident in the quality of person that I am and what I stand for.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt. I have no doubt in what Masai did. I thought also one of the themes throughout the one-hour press conference, just again, go listen to that press conference. Go watch that press conference. I mean, the Larry O'Brien trophy gets brought in the last 5 minutes. It's great. He makes jokes. It's amazing. One of the themes I thought Masai did in terms of throughout the press conference was that he showed a lot of class.
Yeah.
And he showed a lot of... he was very humble throughout the whole process. You know, Masai is someone who definitely speaks very confidently. I don't think he's a man that lacks confidence. But he also does it while being extremely humble in the sense that he understands that his own success is not just on him. He has a team. He has an organization. And he has people that have been with the organization that he showed support to. Specifically, he talked about how he conversed with Dwayne Casey. He conversed with DeMar DeRozan. And even, you know, other people, like he showed support for Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant in terms of their injuries, and he wished them well. And even when asked about Executive of the Year, which, I mean, Masai finished fourth, and we could talk about that a little bit later, but he even said, like, I believe that John Horst was the Executive of the Year this year, and Tim Connolly was a close second. And he didn't say anything about Lawrence Frank, who came third, which is amazing to me how he came third, but I just thought Masai handled himself really well, and you know, he made sure to acknowledge that this is the entire process, not just about him. And I think that's very important. As a leader, you need to be able to give credit to other people, and you need to not just take it all for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, there might be deals that Masai needs to make with the with the Bucks and the
and
the Nuggets, you know. So got to keep those good vibes with those guys, and who knows, Giannis 2021. No.
Well, funny you mentioned that, because apropos of nothing, Masai was talking about how great it was that, you know, four of the major award winners. I think
that was a really great point.
MVP was Giannis.
Rookie of the year was Luka Doncic.
Yep. Most improved, Pascal.
A defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert.
The Gobert one, I'm a little iffy on. I mean, I guess there wasn't a great candidate to pick from, but Gobert wearing a back-to-back years is a little weird to me. Regardless, though, he was talking about the fact that, look, it's great that, you know, it's a reflection of the fact that the NBA has sort of moved towards a global game, that so many of these major awards are going to players who were born outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And during that speech, he was like, oh, by the way, in terms of Giannis, excuse me, but Giannis is not Greek, Giannis is Nigerian. And this is a bigger conversation that we can have, maybe not on today's show, but, you know, in terms of just ethnicity versus nationality and sort of how you can pick and choose and how you can navigate that and how other people navigate. People of privilege end up deciding what that is for you and when it's convenient to take you under the banner and when it's not convenient to just discard you. And I think, you know, we're neither Greek nor Nigerian, but I think as immigrants to this country, like, it's pretty clear in terms of sort of what that dynamic is and sort of the hypocrisy that goes with it. But, I mean, him just bringing up Giannis always reminds me of the fact that 2021, it's not too far away.
No, it's not. And, you know, you look at the Raptors planning for this free agency,
mm-hmm.
and what they could do with Kawhi, what they could do with Marcus Gasol, Danny Green. You know, obviously Kawhi is going to have to decide between that 5 years, $190 million, or whether he wants to just commit to something short term, and then evaluate his options from there. But either way, I think Masai, in an ideal world, wants to keep that cap space ready for 2021, right?
And, oh, it'll be ready.
Yeah, exactly.
I guarantee you, it will be ready.
So, again, I think when you talk about Masai handling the press conference professionally and, you know, being emotional at the right moments.
Mm-hmm.
Being professional and respectful at the right moments. And, you know, it shows some growth on his part, right? That we've gone from F Brooklyn and, you know, we don't give a it about it to where he is now as well, right? So I think, you know, I think he can see the big picture now.
Oh, definitely.
A lot more clearly. In terms of where the Raptors can get to, it's sort of that realization of that vision that he's always had, and now he can really taste it with the Raptors having won a championship. It's sort of validated all the sacrifice that he's made, all the time that he's put in, and not just with the Raptors, with Giants of Africa, Basketball Without Borders, mm-hmm. everything that he's done. You know, now he can. It's almost like that vision that he had, that reality is starting to align, and he can taste it.
Yeah, and I'm very happy that it's happening here in Toronto, because I don't think there's a better place for it. And I think Masai knows that. One other theme that was mentioned. I think one thing that's great about winning a championship, I mean, there's a lot of great things about winning a championship, by the way. Like, just some, like, we were driving on the highway back from OVO to the Yahoo office.
Yeah.
And we passed by, like, Lakeshore, when you, like, exit the Gardner and the Lakeshore and
Spadina.
The Spadina exit. And I'm just like, honestly, this is a very decrepit part of the city. The Gardner is one of the ugliest, streets I've ever seen. But it just evokes happy memories, because I just remember the last time I was there, there were fans, like, piling up. And just, I mean, the parade is just so great. So there's a lot of great things about winning a championship, is what I'm saying. Now, one of the other great things about winning a championship is that you can be completely truthful and honest.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start to forgive, because this is the ultimate goal. Everyone works towards it. And everyone understands and respects that, especially in sports.
Yep.
Two things. So, one, Masai talked about how, yes, he had to have difficult conversations with Kyle Lowry around the time of the trade. It's already previously reported. I think it came out in the Sixers series. Shams had to sit down with Kyle. I remember this was after practice, I think game 3, when Pascal had the questionable calf thing.
Right.
But so it was revealed back then that they had this conversation. And I think Masai went into more details about how the fact that, yes, there were frostiness. I think he said that it showed on the part of Kyle Lowry that he took it more of Kyle Lowry's sense of loyalty rather than sort of his sort of priorities being out of line. But, you know, this 2-hour conversation they had with Kyle Lowry, I think it really did change a lot for the team, in the sense that it just put everyone on this right path. Everyone's on the right mentality. Everyone's working towards the same goal. There were no more conflicts left on the team. And they could just focus on winning the title. And I think, you know, I mean, you're the one who asked Masai about in the first place. So you can tell him, you can tell everybody what Masai thinks about Kyle Lowry and his stature within the franchise.
Greatest Raptor of all time. That's what he said.
That's a quote.
That is straight from Masai. And when you look at the difference, that sort of the turn that the team took, after that conversation, you know, when they won 8 out of 9 games right after that.
Yep.
And, you know, we always sort of have that cliche that the point guard is the head of the snake. And
especially here in Toronto.
Especially here in Toronto. And when you look at Kyle Lowry, you know, even today in the Sports Illustrated article by Chris Mannix talking about how he was just behaving sort of indifferently towards the team. It's like, I'm going to show up, I'm going to do my job, and that's it. And
that's a weird thing, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Kyle Lowry to operate. Because Kyle Lowry, as we know, gives more Fs than anybody else on the court. And so for him to do that, it's very out of character.
Yeah, and you know, it sort of reminded me of LeBron's first season in Miami where, you know, LeBron is someone that typically just likes to have fun, play basketball, have a good time. And when everyone sort of pitted him as the villain, as the enemy, he almost tried to take on that role, but it didn't suit him, right?
He couldn't be someone he wasn't.
Exactly. And I think we saw a bit of that this season with Lowry. You know, he's someone that teammates genuinely love.
Everybody loves Kyle.
Exactly, right? And I think he also loves to show that appreciation for them. Yeah. So for him, almost, you know, whether it was out of loyalty to DeRozan saying, no, all of you are my coworkers now, I just don't think that was just natural for him, right? And so after that conversation, after when you have that heart-to-heart with Masai, and again, the key is honesty, having that open communication to get past that. And, you know, after that, I think we saw a different Kyle Lowry. We saw, you know, teammates sort of elevate their games as well. You know, you talk about Siakam finding his best basketball in that Feb sort of stretch. You know, I think
that's when that 44-point game happened.
Yeah, and then I think there's little things like that, right? When, say, for example, Kyle is feeling it or Kawhi is feeling it, and they're still making the extra effort to get other guys involved. As teammates, that gives you confidence.
Yep.
And, you know, I think when Kyle is sort of boosting everyone up, that's when the team is at its best, right? Because he knows better than anyone on this team how to make everyone else better.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that conversation did for this team.
Yeah, for sure. And if you look at the roster, the way it's built, because there's so many young guys and then new guys, you needed somebody who was going to step up as a leader. And I think Kawhi led in his own way. And I think his leadership is definitely not to be understated. I mean, the fact that everyone was so calm throughout the playoffs speaks to leadership, right? We're talking about a team that, let's be realistic, the Raptors as a team have panicked at times in the playoffs. but I think the only candidate who could have stepped up to be a leader in the sense of just leading the franchise, who was in the actual position that has the history, that has the, you know, just the clout, the sort of, who earned the right to lead the team, is Kyle Lowry. And he's always done it. This whole run has been about Kyle Lowry turning around, becoming a superstar, him and DeMar together, making this run. And now eventually him and Kawhi finishing the quest for the first title. But, yeah, I mean, you needed to make sure, I mean, as a, just a manager of your team, you need to make sure that Kyle was bought in. And I think to have that difficult heart-to-heart, Masai detailed it as it was 2 hours. It was a very difficult conversation. You can imagine. Masai actually mentioned at one point that DeMar used to always say that Masai and Kyle had the same sort of mentality, sort of both kind of stubborn, both kind of like fiery and competitive. And so you could see how two of those guys together would butt heads, especially after something like this happens. But they got through it, and Masai talked about how proud everybody was in the organization, both him and everyone else down the line. The way Kyle Lowry started Game 6, scoring the first 11 points, dishing off to Pascal for corner threes, you know, pulling up, and the way he just led that team, you know, just everyone was very happy. And again, you know, you can have a happy ending when the ending is happy, but, you know, a lot of the times you just can't afford to be honest. And if the Raptors never won the championship, they probably wouldn't talk about this stuff. But now we got to know. And we also got to know the fact that, obviously, DeMar was very upset at the time of the trade, you know, based on the way it went down. It sort of just, I don't think he was ready for it. And I think, you know, he reacted in a way that was completely understandable. But back in February, first game post All-Star break, when the Raptors had the Spurs in town, Besides, detailed a story about how DeRozan came into the locker room. I'm not sure if it was before or after the game, but he came into the locker room, sought Masai out, and gave him a hug and asked him about his family. And I think that really speaks to the idea that, first off, DeMar is a class individual. We've all dealt with DeMar. He is amazing. I mean, we can critique his game, you know, like, you know, whatever. People get jokes off. It is what it is. But, like, DeMar as a person is amazing. He's always treated people with respect. And I think in that moment, it really showed humility and growth on his part. But it also shows sort of just like the idea that the Raptors are a family and families fight. It happens. It happens in every family, but you stick together. And I think that was a huge moment. And I'm really happy for both Masai and DeMar that they got to have that moment, because they should both be celebrated as franchise giants.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at DeMar DeRozan, you know, I think part of why the attachment to him in this city is so strong is so many of us have grown up with him.
Yep.
Right. And you look at him coming over as a 19-year-old, and up to that moment where he was traded, you know, he was Toronto.
Yeah. And he embraced Toronto before anyone else embraced Toronto. Absolutely. And that includes Kyle.
Yep. Yep. Most definitely. And, you know, I think the trade was another moment for him to grow from.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it took some time because there were some very raw feelings. And, you know, I think for a guy like DeMar, especially, you know, growing up in Compton, he's talked about how many people close to him have died. And he's sort of grown up watching that. And so he holds those people that are close to him even closer, right?
Yeah.
And so to suddenly be shipped out of that, mm-hmm. On a professional level, it had to hurt.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And the fact that it hurt meant it was reflective of how much he loved the city, how much he embraced the organization.
Yeah.
How much he embodied it, to be honest.
And so I think over the course of the season, to understand, to sort of have time heal that wound, and for him to get to the point where he even says in an interview publicly that he understands that he had to be the sacrificial lamb,
mm-hmm.
Which frankly he was. And again, the greatest compliment to DeMar DeRozan in all this will be the fact that he grew up from a 19-year-old kid that was so raw, he couldn't dribble, couldn't shoot, to a point where he was good enough to be traded for Kawhi Leonard.
Yep.
And that is 100% a credit to him, his work ethic, his devotion, his passion for being the guy for Toronto. Because the one thing I will always stand by is when he was drafted to be a complimentary piece for Chris Bosh.
Yep.
He was not drafted to be the guy. But once Chris Bosh left, they had to put someone at the front of the organization, and he took it on. There's not a lot of people that would take that on, right?
No.
So he took the good with it, he took the bad with it,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I think ultimately it's just great to see him on the positive side of things now, being genuinely happy for the city, the franchise, and I think, you know, for as long as there seemed to be that tension between Masai and DeRozan, I think it hurt all of us a little bit.
It does,
just
yeah.
Because
there's enough room in our hearts to love everybody in this run.
Exactly. And so for now to see that both of them are on the same page, that they both still care deeply about each other. I mean, that was easily the most emotional part of the press conference for Masai. I mean, there were times where he was choked up, mm-hmm. you know, just talking about, you know, having to walk around in that hotel in Kenya at 4 a.m. Right. For 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
to muster up the courage to tell DeRozan that he got traded.
And we're not talking about a Bob Myers level worked up.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. So
nothing walking in, nothing walking out, but it was all on the table there. Anyway, watching Andre Iguodala's Breakfast Club interview, very, very revealing. Anyway, yeah, for sure. And I think the subtext of this is also that when you trade a guy who's a cornerstone of your franchise and a leader of the franchise, right, in DeMar, you need someone to step into that leadership vacuum. And I think Masai, more than anything else, has sort of continuously stepped up. He embodies the Raptors. When you think about the Raptors, you think about Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not the case for most organizations. Maybe it is for San Antonio, where it's like Pop and mm-hmm. RC Buford. And maybe a couple other places, but especially in Toronto. You think of Toronto, you think about Masai Ujiri.
Yeah.
And, you know, Masai also had to step into that, but obviously it was difficult.
I mean, you also see the respect that Masai has when, you know, we talk about name drops, and he, casually just informs us that Pat Riley got in touch.
Oh yeah,
to let him know that, you know, it almost like, you know, if anyone's talking to you about Asterix, don't worry about it, because you will have this championship forever. It'll be a part of your franchise history forever. No one can ever take a ring away from you.
Yeah. Even though Mark Cuban hired a whole investigative team. Anyway, we'll end this Masai segment, because we realize it's long, but honestly, it was, again, go back and listen to it. It's amazing, just amazing to watch him speak and sort of the vision he has and sort of that, knowing that that's the person that's leading this team. A couple of sound bites that came out of it, just funny things.
Yeah.
One, Serge Ibaka coming up to him the other day and being like, hey, boss man, we can win this again. And it's just two things.
Two times.
It's really funny to call him boss man. And yeah. I feel like that's a real cultural choice of words there. But it's actually really funny. And I just think that, like, the mentality that the players have, I like that they're already thinking about winning again.
I mean, Serge is thinking about going three-peat. That's basically what Masai said.
Yeah, that's true. We can win two more.
This guy got back to the finals for the first time in, what, 8 years?
Yeah.
And he wants to go three-peat. But yeah, again, the mindset you speak of is exactly what you want to see, exactly what you want to hear.
Yep.
I mean, you can even go back to that Fred quote when he was asked about Kawhi, and, you know, he was like, yeah, well, if he leaves, we're going to kick his ass. And so I think, yeah, the mindset, I think when you get past that final hurdle, mm-hmm. it takes your confidence, it takes your mentality to another level. That, again, we talk about belief over and over again with Masai, and now, you know, that the realization that you know, you have a team good enough, that, you know, you can always talk about, yeah, we've got a team, we can be good enough, but to go out and actually do it now, I think it can take this team to another level, especially when you consider the fact that they literally play 27 regular season games together. And then the playoffs, they sort of kept finding new ways to improve, and now they'll actually have a full training camp. But Masai has spoken so many times about how he doesn't actually like the trade deadline, because, you know, you're sort of putting things together on the fly. Thankfully, this team had the IQ to do it, with so many smart guys on the roster. But now, if you bring everyone back, you have potentially, you know, that chemistry that you carry over from last year. You've got a full training camp. You've got Nick Nurse actually going into a second season now, that he will have learned from. And yeah, you bring the whole band back, they are definitely the favorites to win the 2019-20 title.
Definitely. Masai was also asked in the middle of the press conference, about 30 minutes in, do you see the Raptors and basketball as a sport overtaking hockey and the Raptors, and the Leafs in Toronto? And Masai was like, let me reach for a handkerchief. Oh, this is a loaded question.
I mean, yeah, the fire emojis were just.
And he was like, listen, man, Shanahan's my guy. Kyle Dubas is my guy. But yes. And that's amazing. And then, you know, he wanted to say that he believes the Leafs will win the title eventually. And, you know, we'll see about that one. But that's a pretty bold thing to say, and I like that mentality. I like that mentality. If you look at franchises on the upswing, he also said, look, there's room in Toronto and room in Canada to love the Blue Jays, to love, you know, TFC, to love the Leafs, maybe not the rest of Canada, but at least in Toronto there's enough room to love the Leafs, and, you know, there's enough room to love the Raptors, and we can all just share.
Yep.
I mean, it is one organization after all, but ultimately, to have that mentality and to sort of look at the landscape and say, You know, you have the Vince Carter effect, you have the Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan effect, and then you have the Kawhi Leonard effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, shit. We saw Vince Carter take this franchise on another level, and then you see 3 million people in the streets. Like, just to put 3 million people in the streets in perspective, like, that's more than, like, most, like, major political gatherings. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mean to trivialize political gatherings. Obviously, that's way more important than winning a championship, but, like, 3 million people is an insane amount of people, and I mean, that's like 1/10 of the Canadian population that's just gathered in, you know, Lakeshore Boulevard on the on ramp to Spadina watching the parade float. So, I mean, what do you think? Leafs versus Raptors eventually.
Eventually, I mean, I don't think this is enough. I think you've got to win even more, where you get. And the bandwagon to sort of almost commit.
Mm-hmm.
I do think
I do think the Leafs will be number one, but I don't think that's a big deal. I think the Raptors can be right there with them in terms of the passion for the sport. I think one thing that maybe sort of flies under the radar is the fact that, you know, there just weren't any Canadian hockey teams that were playing while the Raptors were on this run. And I think that sort of helped magnify and bring all the media attention that it brought. Mm-hmm. You know, it would have been interesting to see what it looked like had the Leafs gone further or any of the other Canadian teams that made it to the postseason. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing that Canada's most passionate about hockey. That's a sport that that Canada's had a history of being the best at.
And, yeah, for sure.
Proven it time and time again. And so I think in terms of that growth, it might be more on Team Canada on the international stage elevating their game as opposed to the Raptors. Obviously, it'll be great if the Raptors can continue their success. But, you know, if Nick Nurse can can bring a world title to Team Canada, then you know, I think you really start to see something special happen here.
Yeah. And, I mean, just to use a personal example, like my little brother is 16 years old. He's in high school. Like, he doesn't really – he likes sports, but, like, I think he likes sports a lot because, like, our dad likes sports and that, like, I like sports, and so he wants to relate to us.
Right.
And I think in this run more than anything else, I mean, he has just – him and everybody in the school, shout out MCI, but, like, everybody just gravitated towards the Raptors, even people that don't care about sports. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, this is the great thing about sports is that it unites people across different lines, and it brings people together under one banner to just celebrate something. And yeah. I think Toronto, for a very long time, has needed a moment to celebrate itself, I think. I've said it on this podcast before, but I'm like, you know, like, Toronto is a place where people from all over the world come and choose to make this place their secondary home.
Yeah.
Right? We're talking about a city that I think most recent demographics say, like, more than 50% of Canadians are not first generation.
Right.
Right. And this is a place that people choose to come here. And so if you choose to go to a place and make that place your home, there is a certain civic pride that is associated with it. You choose it for a reason. And I think this has been a very difficult process to find a specific time to celebrate it, a specific reason to celebrate it. And I think the fact that Toronto is able to galvanize so many people like my brother, who were just, they're not necessarily fans of the Raptors. Like, he likes the Raptors, but, you know, whatever. To put them all in the same bandwagon and say that my brother's hosting Wasp watch parties with, like, his little friends and stuff like that, and they're just getting together to watch a team, and he's talking to me about, you know, oh yeah, we're gonna go play basketball. And I'm like, you don't even play that much basketball, but I don't judge it. I'm just saying, like, this is completely, it's beautiful to see. I'm really happy everyone's on the bandwagon, and that's the real Kawhi effect. Anyway, we're gonna take a quick break right here. We're gonna hear from our sponsor, and we're gonna come back and talk about, you know, Kawhi's free agency and a lot of other important things.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the second half of Raptors of Everything, still here with Vic. Kawhi's free agency. So you wrote a great piece earlier this week, sort of detailing, was it this week or was it last week?
Last week. It was before I went away for the weekend. Yeah, so last week.
Where'd you go for the weekend?
Went to Howe Island for a buddy's.
What is that? Where's that?
It's like way west. So, you know, we went past Ajax, Pickering. It's like 280 kilometers west of here.
And so basically, we drove all the way to the edge, and you're at a ferry, and it takes you over to the island. And yeah, we got a beautiful spot. And it was like 8 to 10 of us. My buddy is more of an outdoors person, so he just wanted to do something chill, where we had some canoes and we had, you know,
a whole lot of Canadian shit is what you're telling me.
Yeah, man. So just hung out. Finally got some time to myself after this crazy postseason run.
Yeah, you needed it. We all needed it.
We all needed to recharge, right?
So, load management.
Shouts to Noor. He's getting married in a bit. That was a good.
Shout out. Congratulations.
That was a good celebration. But yeah, the Kawhi piece. Yeah, just looking at Kawhi's financial options in terms of what he can look to do. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that sort of I drew from that as I was working through it was the fact that whether it's short term or long term, it's the Raptors who are in the best position. And, you know,
that was backed up, by the way, by Chris Haynes of Yahoo reporting that Kawhi is seriously considering signing in Toronto. We know.
Yes. Yahoo Sports, Chris Haynes.
Yeah, that's right. And we don't know. I'm not going to speak for Chris in terms of his sourcing, but we do know for a fact that Uncle Dennis, who gives very few interviews on the record, gave an interview to Chris Haynes in the middle of, I think, May, where he talked about sort of the relationship in Toronto and sort of, you know, he didn't obviously go out and say anything specific about signing, but I'm just saying there is that connection there, and I'm, you know.
For sure.
It's good signs, man. Good signs.
Yep.
Another good sign. The Raptors, someone just DM'd me, and I don't do betting odds and stuff like that, but someone said the Raptors in Vegas were -330 to sign Kawhi Leonard in terms of Kawhi's. I think the bet is specifically Kawhi plays his first game as a member of X team in 2019. And I think the Raptors have steadily moved. There were even odds with the Clippers, and then they moved to like -110, minus, you know,
I think a couple of days it was -250, yeah.
Now it's like, he says it's like -500, and like they took the bet off the table altogether. So it does feel like they're either Raptors fans are going crazy and, you know, we're betting $500 to win $100, which is would be terrible odds, or that people really, at least people in the betting community, know something that we don't. But as you mentioned, the 1+1 is an option. Two plus one is an option. Obviously, the full 5 years is an option, or maybe 4+1. Maybe quickly break down the pros and cons to each of the three scenarios there.
So, you know, with the 1+1 option, I think for him, it's maybe more about aligning himself with Kyle Lowry. You know, obviously Lowry is heading into the final year of his deal. Serge Ibaka is also heading into the final year of his deal. So, you know, that will give him the opportunity to sort of play out another year here, try to go back to back and then see where things are at next year. And then, you know, see what's best from there. With the 2+1, I think that is about maximizing his financial leverage, his financial opportunity, because then, you know, he's completed 8 seasons in the league. You think about the supermax that the supermax that he missed out.
That's 35% of the cap.
Exactly.
Instead of 30% of the cap.
Yeah, that's what he missed out on when he got traded from San Antonio.
Right.
So by the way for him to be re-eligible for that is to become a 10-year veteran.
Yep.
So 2 more seasons is what gets him there. So you're looking at, you know, and plus it gives you that added security. If you get a 2+1 player option, you know, that's in excess of $100 million that you'll be in line for. So with a guy with a bit of an injury history, that I can see that being more viable than the 1+1. And also putting him in position that, you know, pretty much his age 30 season to get that one huge contract. But again, if he's really risk averse and is looking to just commit long term, then there's the 5 years, 190, which, you know, when you look at what other teams can offer with the 4 years, 141. Again, that's another big distinguishing factor for him to consider.
Yeah, I mean, $50 million guaranteed money is $50 million. I know not everyone. I mean, look, obviously, LeBron and KD have sort of shown in previous years that if you are of a certain stature, you can sort of roll it over,
yeah,
and still keep your money regardless. And we're going to see with KD, like he just literally tore his Achilles. It's a major basketball injury. Can't believe Bob Myers on that stand doing that thing. And yeah, he's still going to get his money, right?
Yeah,
and
he's still going to get max offer.
But I think Well, first off, I think Kawhi in the playoffs has shown that he was that caliber. But I think KD and LeBron also showed over multiple years that they're that caliber. So who knows? We'll see. I think probably most likely the 2+1 makes the most sense. Just sort of split the difference a little bit. Mm-hmm. You get flexibility, and also you get, you know, most long-term earnings. But
yeah,
I'm pretty confident. Again, you can watch Kawhi Watch with me and Alex. We're filming a new episode on Thursday. Same location, obviously, because, you know, we don't go anywhere else other than the diner. But yeah, I mean, the first 3 episodes of Kawhi Watch are out. You can listen to it on this podcast feed, or you can go to the Yahoo Sports Canada.
How's the breakfast there?
It was good. I tried a frittata for the first time.
Okay.
Because I think Asad on this podcast, it was like 5 a.m. The Raptors won the title. For some reason, someone made a stupid pun about, you know, Tillman Frittata, the Rockets gambling owner or whatever. And I was like, I don't even know what a frittata is. So I tried a frittata. It's like a quiche, I guess, without like the outside shell.
Huh.
Yeah. It's like, okay. Imagine like egg lasagna, which.
That doesn't sound great.
Generally speaking, I don't like to eat eggs in that fashion, but the rest of their food was pretty good. It was pretty good. And they got great orange juice and also very friendly staff. So check out that diner. Okay. So we talked about the Kawhi thing.
Yeah.
You know, all the sightings across the city. So like, again, if you want to hear more about that stuff, you go listen to Kawhi Watch. I mean, that's legitimately why we're doing that show. Let's talk about everyone else. So Masai, as we mentioned earlier in his press conference today, was specifically asked about Mark and Danny, and you know, his thing was, our mindset is we're going to bring everyone back. And, of course, everyone says that. Whether that actually happens or not, we'll see. It would be very expensive to bring everyone back. That's sort of the issue. So, Mark, first off, has a $26 million player option where the deadline to pick that up is the 27th. So, mm-hmm. We'll see a decision there. If he opts out, he might renegotiate. Who knows? But there will be a lot of teams that will be interested in Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
And with Danny Green, I think he also wants a long-term deal now that he's turned 32. Probably the last big long-term deal of his career. And again, there's a lot of cap room out there on a lot of teams with a lot of, you know, mid-level exceptions that can offer for multiple years and pretty solid money. And so it would be pretty expensive to bring both of those guys back. What's your prediction in terms of those two guys, the fate of those two guys, you know, assuming that Kawhi does come back?
I think assuming Kawhi does come back, I think we see both those guys back. I think as long as that major domino falls, I do expect Masai to follow through on his plan of bringing everyone back, at least in terms of the core pieces. And obviously, Marc Gasol and Danny Green are big parts of that core. And, yep. You know, one thing I do find interesting with Marc Gasol is, you know, is whether or not he'll take some advice from his brother, who also, you know, it was just 2017 when he had a player option for $16 million that he declined. And ended up signing a more long-term deal. He ended up getting a 3-year deal worth $48 million.
I couldn't believe the first gave him that deal, by the way.
So, but
he's mad old at that point.
Yeah, no, for sure. But the interesting thing about that was that the final year there was only $6.7 million that was guaranteed.
Okay.
So I do wonder if there is maybe potentially a deal that Masai can structure similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what eventually made it feasible for the Spurs to buy him out and then go to the Bucks, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, if there is something like that that can be drawn up, then I think he'll look into it. Obviously, the 3-year plan might cut into that 2021 plan. So we have to see where Masai stands on that.
But I mean, even to that point, I think you can still move a guy if you assume that Marc Gasol. Okay, first off, he's going to decline physically. Although, having seen him try to dunk a couple times throughout the playoffs, I'm just saying, like, I don't think there's too much of a physical decline. I think mostly he's getting by on positioning and smarts, and he's clearly shown he's effective doing that.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time Masai re-signed a guy and then traded him.
Ooh. Yo.
So.
Shout out Nene.
Shout out Nene.
Nene was a good
shout
player.
Shout out Terrence Ross.
I was like Nene. Terrence Ross. That's right. He gave it to Serge Ibaka. I was so happy at that point.
Yeah,
that we got Serge Ibaka. Because like,
no, hey. I remember you messaged me. I'm pretty sure you messaged me saying that we're going to win the championship.
All right, I meant 2 years later.
I mean, hey, it all worked out, man. That's why we can say it now.
Yeah.
It's all fun and games now.
And it's a shame that PJ Tucker didn't take the money here and decided to go to Houston, where he had a better chance.
I mean, his loss,
winning. Oh, sorry. Actually, no, never mind.
He wanted to go play with Kyle Lowry Light.
I don't know. I feel like that's a disrespect to Kyler at this point.
Okay, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of the money, you know, I think Marc Gasol is going to be an interesting one. I think they'll figure it out. Masai spoke about his relationship with Mark's agent,
right?
And that Bobby Webster's already been in conversations with the agent. So I think that will get sorted out pretty easily. I think Marc Gasol is another guy that just loves being here.
Oh, yeah.
And you look at how much fun he had at that parade, and you just see him rocking We the North stuff all the time. I mean, literally the day he got traded here, he posted that Instagram picture with, you know, those Raptors dolls and the jersey and everything ready to go. I think he's really embraced the city. So I think they'll work something out, whether it's just to be back for next year and he picks up that player option, or whether they renege a new deal with Danny Green. It seems like ownership doesn't seem to have an issue with the luxury tax, at least for one more year. Mm-hmm. So I think they will figure out a deal with Danny as well. And again, another guy that loves the city, so
will
possibly take a little less money. Not necessarily less money, but I think he'll be happy to turn down those overpay deals to stay here. You know,
I mean, it depends on who's recruiting, who's not recruiting.
Yeah,
and I think there are some big suitors in the market right now. But okay, so this is the only thing, right? Okay, so if you subtract Gasol's player option, and you account for Kawhi making $30 million a year next year.
Yeah.
And
so the first year of Kawhi's deal would work out to about $33 million.
Okay, $33 million. That's fine. So the Raptors would be at that point already over the cap.
Yep.
The cap is about 108. I think the Raptors would be about 115.
Yep.
If those guys happen, depending on, so basically you're just asking yourself, how much luxury tax do you want to pay between Marc Gasol and Danny Green? If the two of them are making a combined $30 million, that's probably too much. Yeah. But if they're making closer to like $25 million or maybe even $22 million, which again, this is very optimistic. These guys are worth more than that, and I think they should chase the money if that's what they want to do with their careers and the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
But if it's closer to the 20 and versus the 30 end, then I think it's more palatable. And you got to keep in mind that the repeater tax is going to come into effect here, because the Raptors pay the tax this year. And so first year you pay the tax, the tax is a one-to-one in terms of how much you're over the luxury tax threshold. And I think the threshold is about 120-some million, 125, let's say. And so, again, you know, the first year, all the money that you're over the luxury tax is a one-to-one. The second year, it becomes more punitive. So the first $5 million that you're over this luxury tax, it's a one-to-one.
Yeah.
And then the $5 to $10 million is about 1.25. And then eventually it escalates. And so it could get very expensive. So, again, every additional dollar is going to sort of impact the bottom line here. But look, man. If you're going to charge that much for playoff tickets, you better bring everyone back, especially if Kawhi wants to stay. So, you know, that's all we'll say for that as right now. Obviously, everything is contingent on Kawhi. So, and, you know, Masai already talked about how Danny and Mark both understand that and they respect that. So, we'll see what happens there. Last thing I want to end the show with is award season.
Yes.
So the NBA finally had their award show last night. Shout out Pascal, winning Most Improved Player.
Shouts to Pascal.
Did you have any doubt that he was going to win?
No.
Because there was a lot of D'Angelo Russell hype at the end.
No.
Obviously, that infamous jump segment where Richard Jefferson, who was an employee of the Nets, came out and sort of made a whole case for why D'Angelo's great and how Pascal didn't really improve.
I mean,
Tracy McGrady really said, did Pascal really improve? And then Pascal went on the road in game three against Orlando, Tracy McGrady calling the game for his former Magic, and seeing Pascal carry the team while Kawhi was sick. But, you know, did he really improve?
32 points, game one of the NBA Finals. Made 11 straight shots at one point. Shot 14 for 17 for the game. I mean, what else do you want to say about this dude? Top 30 player in the league.
Let's say a couple more things about this player, okay?
All right.
In terms of total scoring between duos, Kawhi, Pascal this year, in I think three more games in this playoff run, but tied the highest total ever made by Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen.
So they were tied for second.
Their second highest total?
Yeah.
They finished behind
LeBron and Wade.
Okay, but in terms of the highest MJ and
Scottie, when that's the group that you're in,
it's pretty good.
Yeah,
and also if you remember, Game 6 of a closeout game in the NBA Finals, Raptors call timeout. They're up one. You come out of the timeout, 38 seconds. Raptors up one. They need to score to at least sort of give themselves breathing room. And the play they dial up isn't for Kawhi. The play they dial up isn't for any of their vets. Kyle Lowry runs a pick and roll with Pascal Siakam, feeds Pascal on the roll. Pascal, I mean, first off, Draymond Green just overplays the whole thing, and he sort of puts himself out of position. But Pascal skirts around Draymond, throws up a little floater. Very tough shot. I mean, we know he has great touch and whatever, that he could hit that shot, but within the circumstances, a very tough shot. He sinks it. And really, that's what iced the game. That shot right there.
That was the final field goal for the Raptors in the 2019 postseason.
Yeah. And so that's the guy. That's the guy who won Most Improved.
Siakam scoring on Draymond.
Whew. I mean, he scored on Draymond. He scored on Giannis. He scored
on gave everybody
Embiid.
Buckets.
Remember Jonathan Isaac? We were talking about how much Isaac sort of shut him down in regular season. I mean, shout out Pascal. Much improved. Very most beautiful to see his family together, by the way, as well, because Pascal's talked about how because of difficulties.
That was amazing. That speech was incredible.
Yeah, the speech was great, but like just the difficulty in acquiring visas. And he even talked about when his father passed away in a car accident when he was, you know, abroad.
He couldn't go to the funeral.
He couldn't go to the funeral because he didn't have the visa rights. So the whole family is all over the world. He's got sisters in different parts, and he's got brothers, you know, some with him here, some elsewhere. His mom's, you know, back home.
Love the way his mom was representing, too.
Shout out. But all of them together at the same time was just, it was very beautiful to see. It's very rare when you have a family that, you know, especially if you're not from that place, to all be together in the same place. So,
and I think what was really cool, again, just to touch back on the four international guys winning, is you can see how much of a big deal it is to them, right?
Oh, yeah.
Almost on some level even more than the American players. And, you know, for them to take the journey that they've taken to be in a different country and then to acclimatize to life in North America and do all that while also accustoming themselves with playing at an NBA level, I think that's a beautiful thing. And yeah, it was just really, really cool.
I mean, that's the American game. That's the American dream in the first place.
Exactly.
And that's honestly a lot of people that are in America that are mad about the whole thing now. Like, there's a whole, like, I saw someone tweet out basically like, oh, they came for our jobs and they came for our awards kind of thing. And I'm like,
that was a tweet last night?
Yeah. Don't worry. Let's not talk about that. Let's, however, talk about the fact that Mike Budenholzer won Coach of the Year, which I agree with entirely. I think he did a lot of great things to make the Bucks the best regular season team this season. And he got regular season Coach of the Year.
Yep.
But we know, you know, regular season Coach of the Year, there is a history of regular season Coaches of the Year getting swept in the playoffs. And it's just unfortunate that happened to Mike Budenholzer because Nick Nurse pulled some moves. Shout out Nick Nurse, the playoff MVP.
The playoff
Coach of the Year. I'll say that much.
There's 82 game players and 16 game players. There's 82 game coaches and 16 game coaches.
Man,
Nurse Evett, we got both.
Oh man. Nick Nurse got two bodies on him. Two Coach of the Year bodies on him. No, but seriously, though, obviously, I think Budenholzer is completely deserving of Coach of the Year. And the Bucks had a great year. I mean, he's revamped their defense, sort of, you know, brought clarity to the offense, you know, put a system in place where people fit into the system. And they worked. But also, they only had one option. They only played one way. And if you look at Nick versus Budenholzer, Nick always consistently, based on his background of, you know, coaching overseas, you know, D-League, you know, different pieces all the time, he created a team that was versatile and that was adaptable. And the Raptors are almost like a counter-puncher in boxer. Like, there's some people that just come out firing, and if they hit you with a knockout blow, you're done. And that's what the Bucks are. And the Raptors were like, we'll duck and weave, and then we'll find your weak spots, and we'll outlast you. We'll get better throughout the series, which is what happened, you know, in every single series in the playoffs. And I wish there was some way to honor Nick Nurse, but I mean, I guess, you know, he's literally playing an Arkell show, so.
Yeah, I think he's doing all right.
He's doing okay. Shout out Nick Nurse.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, too, is, like, obviously full credit to everything he's done in the postseason, but when we speak to the Raptors being unflinching, not getting too high, not getting too low, it goes back to the regular season where, you know, you're dealing with load management, you're dealing with injuries to Kyle Lowry, to Fred VanVleet, to Norman Powell, to OG Anunoby, to Jonas Valanciunas, and it was always, hey, next man up, and you just kept on rolling. All that stuff, you look at the health that the Bucks had until late in the season, you know, and then the Raptors finished with two less wins, right? So, full credit to Nick, and, you know, a lot of people gave him heat over the course of the regular season when he'd compare his
you know, what he was going through in the NBA, to his G League experiences, to his British Basketball League experiences. And I thought that was a real asset for him. The fact that, you know, he didn't put the NBA on a pedestal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he treated all the same.
Exactly.
And I think it's true, though. Like, honestly, it's like you are with any point in your career where it's like you can't really see the bigger picture. You can only live in the moment.
Yep.
And in the moment, my first job interview, like, it was like the biggest thing to me. It was as big as me interviewing here at Yahoo. You know what I mean? Like, it just, it's the same feeling. Obviously, there's no comparison. There's yeah, a different scale, but it's the same shit, you know? So, okay, so honestly, I'm not really bothered about the Coach of the Year thing. I think Bud deserves it.
Yeah, I don't care.
I haven't actually seen I couldn't find the full voting results, so I'm not sure where Nick placed, but he should place pretty high. I doubt he would. The one thing that did bother me, Executive of the Year, which is, by the way, the rest of the awards voted on by media members. Executive of the Year voted on by peers.
Right.
So other, you know, GMs around the league. They gave it to John Horst, which I don't disagree with. John Horst came in, made some good moves. I mean, like, they're mid moves. Like, he hired Budenholzer, which is a good hire. Like, you know, it took them to the regular season, you know, dreams. And, you know, he got Brook Lopez and, I mean, for a very cheap deal, and everyone likes that. And Mirotić, at least at the time, looked like a good trade. And George Hill, eh. But, I mean, like, ultimately, you know, that's a good job. But to acquire Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, and Marc Gasol on top of signing Fred VanVleet undrafted and Pascal Siakam picking 27th overall, yeah, and making the whole organization run and getting everyone on the same vision and then winning the championship, I know it's voted on at the end of the regular season, but the fact that Masai finished fourth, can you explain that to me? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't. Fourth.
The more I think about it, the more I think it's a flex for Masai that the other executives look at him and it's like, yeah, of course he got Kawhi and Danny for DeMar and Jakob Poeltl. Of course he got Marc Gasol.
That's not enough. That's impressive by Masai standards.
It's just another day in the office for Masai. So it's a flex.
Oh, yeah. You know what's a real flex? Him saying credit to these two GMs here, you know, Connolly and Horst. Didn't say anything about Lawrence Frank. Who, you know, it was probably just, you know, probably stalking Kawhi as we speak right now. But, you know, him saying that, you know, shout out these guys that deserve the award. The only award that I care about is the Larry O.B.
You just gave me an image of Lawrence Frank, like, on the Maid of the Mist. Just like
squinting like, Where is Kawhi? It's oh man.
You think he was trying to hook him up with a discount at Home Depot? we'll get you all the boxes you need. Oh, it's a move in Toronto. Oh, my bad.
Lawrence Frank actually looks like someone that would work at Home Depot. Like, I just like
just low key Kawhi goes looking for help. Lawrence Frank comes
just
up.
Just like posting up by the faucets being like, oh, you deep boxes? Oh, that's over there. Also, Los Angeles is this way. You know. Anyway. No, it was a great time, man. It was a great time. I mean, like, I think full transparency, I wasn't watching the award show live because I just thought it was a little bit too drawn out, and also I just wanted to do something else with my night. But
that's fair, entirely fair.
Yeah, I mean, the reception to the awards, it seemed like people were complaining a lot. And I feel like I was a little bit negative in retrospect about the Bucks. Like, I think they had a great season. It's just that, like, it just, you know, it is just kind of unfortunate the way it worked out. They got three major award winners and no championship, you know?
But yeah,
they're on their way, you know? They're on their way. I mean,
as people who have been covering the Raptors, you know, these are pretty empty awards when you exit the postseason without the ultimate trophy, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anyone really cared too much about Dwayne Casey winning Coach of the Year after getting swept out of the playoffs. You know, Fred VanVleet finishing third in the sixth man voting. You know, no one cares about that stuff when you don't win at all. So I'll take the finals MVP over the regular season MVP.
There you go. All right, Mafik, this is great. We'll check in. I think we'll have more podcasts sort of sporadically made in advance of free agency. I think it's obviously a little bit too big to just sort of keep doing the weekly thing. So look out for more shows from now until pretty much whenever the summer dies down. But thanks, everyone, for listening again. Read everything that me and Mafik write on Yahoo Sports Canada. Go watch Kawhi Watch on YouTube and
watch Kawhi Watch. It's great.
It is. It's not bad. It really is not bad. I've been very positively.
Honestly, it's great production value. I was very impressed.
And you know what? I don't want to take too much credit for it because like I just show up and I'm just like, all right, what's the script? Let's do it. You know, Alex writing the script and everyone else is handling the behind the scenes stuff to make it look good. So shout out to the whole staff here at Yahoo Sports Canada and. Yeah, I'll catch you in the next pod.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.